It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And we start with one of the really big dominoes of the offseason finally falling, something close to your backyard, Fred. Jose Bautista stays in Toronto. And one, something we've talked about a good bit about good situations, familiar places, my personal based-on-nothing theory that sluggers, I like them in Toronto. Considering all of that, but also considering another year on not a young player and a guy coming off a bad year by his standards, how do you look at Bautista?
I think he's probably being drafted a little bit too late in some early drafts, but I can see the uncertainty because he hadn't signed. I think his average draft will move up a little bit. Now, I'm pretty optimistic on him on a per-game basis, like watching him closely last season. He really did seem to struggle after the injuries started to pile up. It's just the amount of games that, you know, gives me some pause with him because, and I've had some people say to me, oh, well, he was just hurt last year and, you know, he'll be fine now. But the previous two seasons, 2014 and 2015, he was quite healthy, but the two seasons prior to that, 2012 and 2013, he missed a lot of time. So three of the past five seasons with Bautista, you haven't received 120 games. So that's kind of my concern. I feel like maybe a good way to approach him is 30 home runs in 130 games, but not 35 home runs in 145 or 150 games. Do you think maybe I'm on the right track there?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. If I told you something like 250, which is what he hit in 2015, 31 or 2 home runs, 90 RBI, 90 runs, which is more or less splitting the difference on the counting stats between his past two seasons. And in most ways, splitting the difference. So again, he hit 250 in 15. But if I give you that kind of line, do you like that? Do you think that's low? Do you think that's high? Where would you be on a line like that?
Yeah, I'd say I'm pretty close to that. I might be just a tick lower, maybe even across the board. He was striking out often last season, and
yes,
that concerns me at his age. So maybe I see an average in the 240s. And, yeah, maybe 30 home runs, but I don't know if I go over that. And then, yeah, with the RBIs and runs, it'll be in the high 80s or not, or maybe 90. It's a real issue of, you know, how good is that Blue Jays offense going to be next season? And something I think fantasy owners will need to get their head around is they weren't that great last season. In 2015, they led the league in runs, but last season they were, you know, above average, but not near the top at all. And you know, losing Encarnacion and replacing with Morales, that's not really a plus move. Having Smoke at first base doesn't really sound so great. I'm not sure, like, left field is still pretty muddled for them. I'm not sure where that lineup will finish and run scored. If I had to guess right now, I'm going to say something like 10th, but I don't think they're a top five lineup. Do you?
No, I think that's reasonable. I was about to say, you know, fifth in the AL or so. Yeah, I think that's a pretty reasonable number. And look, there are reasons to be optimistic about that lineup, to think that maybe there's more in there than we might think. I think the biggest one is if Travis has a really nice bounce-back year and plays a lot and is the guy that we all hoped he would be, and certainly showed some signs of that even upon his return. But I think that what you're kind of hinting at here is that, I mean, you can make a case that there are more reasons to be concerned at individual spots in the lineup, individual guys, than there are reasons to expect improvement. There are a lot of places where you kind of worry, like, what do you get at shortstop? As great as Josh Donaldson is, you know, I feel like it's safe to say there's more downside risk than improvement possibility with Donaldson. You know, Donaldson just turned 31. If I'm predicting one direction or the other, I'm predicting him to fall more likely than to improve. So, you know, I think they're a very good – and again, look, Donaldson's one of the best players in the league. I want to be clear. I'm just saying that it's hard for me to see him taking a step forward at 31.
Yeah,
so you
kind of
look around this lineup, and it's hard to see where you say, yeah, I know they lost some guys, but this is where they're going to be better. This is where they make up for it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I know what you mean with Travis. You know, he's someone who can make the lineup better, but with the other players, I mean, Tulowitzki was much better after he came back from the short DL stint last season. That was the best we've seen him on the Blue Jays. That being said, you know, like, he's at a point in his career with all of his injuries. It's hard to say that he's going to play like that for a whole year. Russell Martin was really, really bad for part of 2016 and then was kind of good for a while around August and then wasn't so great again late in the season. So it's an old lineup. It's hard to think that, and it's a lineup that was reasonably healthy for such an old lineup last season. It's hard to think that any of those players, and I totally agree with you on Donaldson, like, Donaldson's great. I would take him late first round, but we've probably seen his best season. And, you know, expecting him to, he could stay at the level he's at right now maybe for a couple more years, but I feel like that's it. And I don't think Kevin Pillar is going to be a lot better than he was last season, like maybe a little bit or maybe not. It's a lineup that maybe has more downside than it has upside.
I think that for sure. And one of the reasons I think that, watch this clever segue here, is that they lose Michael Saunders, who was not good in the second half, but overall was a nice player for them, was the guy they hoped they were getting. And he now goes to Philadelphia, and the second half fade scares me a little, but I really kind of like this. I certainly like the ballpark. You know, not that it's necessarily a better park to hit in than Toronto, but it's a good place to hit. And I just kind of like, he's not in as good a lineup, but I kind of like just, I don't know, I may be nuts because it's just a really good pitching in that division, but he's a guy I've always kind of liked. He's a guy I think is probably a better player than he gets credit for. I can see him as a mixed league asset at least next year. Are you with me on him?
I'm not quite as optimistic as you, but I see the upside. For me, where I've fallen off with Saunders is that he isn't stealing bases anymore. Now, maybe he could bring that part of his game back a little bit now that he's on a new team. Like, the Blue Jays aren't very aggressive on the base paths, and he hit right in the middle of their lineup a lot last season. I don't think they're willing, especially, to run from there. So, I mean, he had a 21 steal season with Seattle and a 13 steal season with Seattle. If we could get Saunders back to being even a 9 or 10 steal player to go along with 20 home runs, then I'm in. If it's 20 home runs and one steal or two steals, his batting average is typically pretty mediocre, and he's injury prone. So then there's enough downside that I could see him in the late rounds, like, and you maybe start the season on your bench in a mixed league and you kind of see where he goes. I'll be interested to see also where he hits in that lineup, because I agree with you that I don't think it will be a very productive lineup. But if he's their cleanup hitter, for example, then he might be okay in that lineup.
And you know, like a few teams, they've got part of a good lineup. You know, if he may not score a lot of runs hitting fourth, but you've got Herrera getting on base in front of you. You've got a couple of pieces, so you've got the possibility of at least driving in some runs. I will put it this way. He's one of those guys, if there are 10 guys of more or less his level, I like the upside there more than some of those guys, and he's somebody when I get to that point, I'll see his name and say, oh, yeah, that's the one out of this tier that I want.
Yeah, and he's a boomer. He's kind of boomer bust because he's been hurt so often. So I also think the league matters. So if we're thinking like bench player in a 10 or a 12-team league, I would take him, for example, over someone like Nick Markakis, who's just kind of blah. Yep. But if we were in an NL-only league, I would take Nick Markakis just because I know I'm going to get over 600 plate appearances and the stats will just be there, and I can't run the risk of Saunders getting another injury and giving me 300 plate appearances next season. But in that 10- or 12-team mixed league, if that happens with Saunders, he goes on the DL in April, then you just cut him and you know, keep an eye on him the rest of the way.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And while we are talking risk-reward, we move to a guy that I don't particularly care for and really don't like in his new circumstances, and that's Tyson Ross. I am pulling for him. I hope he bounces back. I hope he is healthy. I hope he finds success. But I am sure not going to be the fantasy owner that finds out. I never liked him as much as his reputation in San Diego, and now he goes from one of the best places to pitch in either league, from the non-DH league to one of the worst places to pitch in either league, in the DH league, and coming off a significant and scary injury. I am not even going to touch him until I see that he's healthy, because the risk, even if he is healthy, is so big. I can see him being healthy and not being good. People are excited about this guy, and he once struck out a lot of guys a couple times. I am way, way down on him. Do you like him any more than I do?
I'm going to say that I like him more than you, because you're right. You are way, way down on him. I can see some – the health is such a huge like such a huge component right now with him. If he's healthy, I could see he does get a fair amount of ground balls, so
yes,
that's good. It's going to be harder for him to work around those walks that he's prone for in the American League, so that's bad. So maybe the park factor won't be quite as severe for him if he keeps getting a lot of ground balls, but the walks worry me a lot because he's someone who was able, while he was with the Padres, to have a high whip and a low ERA, and that is hard to do in the American League. Sometimes those things move together. For me, he's your classic. You draft him as a bench player in a mixed league. He starts the year on your bench or in your DL slot if you have DL slots in your league. And when he comes back, you do not put him in your lineup. You leave him there, and you see what he looks like, and then you kind of go from there. But it's almost like the Saunders-Markakis argument. In an AL-only league, I don't want to invest much in Ross. In a mixed league, you know, I'll put him on my bench instead of that Nick Markakis version who just doesn't come to my head right now of a starting pitcher with no upside. And then I'll see kind of where Ross is at during the season. But I'm not terribly optimistic on him either.
Well, let me give you kind of a similar guy to Ross. Not a high floor, low ceiling guy, but a guy kind of similar to Ross in some ways. A guy with a lot of strikeout ability, a guy who's walked a few too many and is coming off a significant health risk. I would much rather have Zach Wheeler than Tyson Ross. Between those two guys, who would you rather have?
I think I might take Ross. Yeah, I think I would take Ross. Part of my concern with Wheeler is I'm not sure what his role is going to be.
That's fair.
If it was mid-March and the Mets and Wheeler was having a nice spring and the Mets had already said that he's their fifth starter, then I might prefer Wheeler. But I'm a little concerned that Wheeler just ends up in the bullpen because I know they floated that out there this winter, and I kind of wonder, and this is just me kind of reading tea leaves, I kind of wonder if they floated that out there this winter as a way of getting his head around something that they actually have already decided they want to do or are pretty you know, interested in doing it.
No, that's a good point. And certainly the Mets have interesting ways of handling public pronouncements. So I think that's a fair point. So, yeah, I might amend that and say, yeah, if I'm confident he's in the rotation. But I think the other part of that is if Wheeler's good, I think he will start. I suspect that if he is good enough to be in their rotation, he will be in their rotation. I don't know that, but it's hard for me to see them liking what they see from him in the spring and putting him in the bullpen.
Yeah, I could see that. And there's certainly enough volatility in that rotation overall that, people were worried last year about Bartolo Colon getting 30 starts and then just everything fell apart around him. Like, between Harvey, between DeGrom, you know, it's not necessarily Wheeler against Seth Lugo and Robert Gzelman for, like, one spot. Like, that could be two or three spots. We don't really know.
Yes, I think. In fact, I think that's likely. I think, you're talking a wide range of potential starts for virtually every Mets starter.
Yeah.
We stay with free agent signings. We move to Oakland. Santiago Casilla joins a muddled Oakland bullpen mix. I think Ryan Madsen is still the guy there. I think there's nobody in that bunch that I'm really crazy about. Is Madsen the guy? And if so, for the combination of relatively low upside as far as strikeouts and ratios and uncertainty in the role, does he hold any appeal?
Yeah, I guess he's a late round guy in a mixed league because we wouldn't be surprised if he got six saves next season and, you know, if he lost the role early. I'll be watching that one during spring training to kind of see where the A's are going with everything. I think Madsen has to be drafted if he still has that closer's role, because he could get you 30 or more saves. The ratios, he's kind of a one-category guy. The ratios won't be,
right,
I don't
that's
think,
the problem.
Impressive, and the strikeout rate won't be impressive. But I wish that there was one alternative. The Casilla addition kind of really muddies the water. If it was just Madsen or Ryan Dahl, then I would say, hey, in a mixed league draft, why don't you take Ryan Madsen in round 25 and Ryan Dahl in your last round? And then you kind of have both covered and just see how April plays out. Now you can't even do that. That makes it less appealing to me than maybe some other clubs that definitely have a second in command if that first one struggles at the beginning of the season.
And to take that a step further, the pitcher I like most out of that bunch is Doolittle. Just purely, he's the one guy that if you told me he was pitching the ninth, I'd say, oh, yeah, that's exciting. know, that's the one guy who can get you enough strikeouts. Or if he were the clear second in line, then he's the kind of guy that you take that flyer on and say, well, he'll still get me some strikeouts. He'll still – there's a pretty good chance that he's an asset. It's certainly not a Patances-type asset, but there's a pretty good chance he's an asset. And if you've also got a chance that he gets you some saves, that's an intriguing pitcher. But when you've got four guys in that mix, you really can't even justify holding Doolittle in the hopes that he gets saves. If you, that has to be an AL-only where you are just happy with the performance and you're not worried about whether you get any saves from him.
Yeah, I agree. And when you look at Doolittle being left-handed, the other pitchers are right-handed. I know that I've always felt like it's easier for a team to move their lefty into the closer's role when they have another lefty. And if you look at all the other names, even Liam Hendricks, John Axford, the other names in the A's bullpen are right-handed. So using any of those righties in the closer's role kind of makes sense for them as far as leading up to the ninth inning.
Yep, absolutely. Also in Oakland, they pick up Trevor Plouffe. I'm not crazy about him. I see a whole bunch of 14 home run seasons and 122. I see a guy moving to a tough place to hit. You know, I guess if I'm at the end and I need a body, I guess. Do you like him more than I do?
No, I think you perfectly explained it. If you're at the end, you need a body. Because Trevor Plouffe is okay. I mean, he'll probably next year get, I don't know, 16 home runs, something like that. After Chris Davis last season, I've decided not to write off hitters going to Oakland and say big ballpark, they can't hit a lot of home runs, because that was kind of everyone's narrative when he left Milwaukee and went to Oakland. But with Plouffe, yeah, he's just kind of blah. Like I said, 16 home runs, you know, maybe 70 RBIs, maybe not even, to hit 250 or 260. Like, he's a body in a 15-team league or an AL-only league at the beginning of the year. In any type of mixed league, he's a body at the beginning of the year that you're always looking to upgrade. But at least he's someone who will play every day at the start of the season.
Yeah. We move from free agent signings to trades, and as we speak this morning, there is a deal that appears to be all but done, virtually done, everything but announced, and that is the Marlins getting Dan Straley. Dan Straley in Cincinnati, I would have wanted no part of. I look at those 31 home runs. I look at a 2.2-to-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio, and I see a guy that I say, no way in the world does he post a 3.6 ERA next year. He moves to Miami, where the ballpark is a lot friendlier, and they're going to be aggressive with the bullpen. I mean, I think that's one of those things, you know, a guy like that who's never put up huge innings totals, if you can say he's not going to be around that third time through the order to get in trouble, and I did not break down his home runs by time through the order, but you know, some of those things, there's the one big thing, which is he goes to a friendlier ballpark, and there are these smaller things, most notably that he's probably going to be in fewer situations where there's trouble. They're probably going to have a quicker hook with him, and that's a pretty good defensive team. I still don't think Straley repeats that 3.6 ERA, but he goes from a guy I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole to a guy who I can see as a streaming option, a guy who is at least on my radar. Do you share my increased optimism, or do you still kind of think this is a guy you don't really want any part of?
Yeah, overall, I think it's a guy that I don't really want any part of. I agree with you. I agree with everything you said as far as that this move boosts his already low fantasy value. It makes it a little less low. I did well after you made that point about times through the order. I quickly looked it up, and at least last season he was pretty balanced as far as home runs and just OPS against the first, second, or third time through the lineup. The bullpen could help him a little bit, although his trouble typically happens all at once in the form of giving up the home runs instead of kind of loading the bases and it's one hit after another. I just think, you know, the BABIP was super low last season.
Yep.
That's probably not repeatable. In that division, I think the Braves lineup is improving. I think the Nats lineup is really good. I think the Mets lineup is okay, and I think the Phillies lineup is not very strong. So I agree with you that he could be a streaming option. So home starts against the Phillies. Home starts when the Padres come to town. Home starts when a team like the Giants that has some good hitters but not a lot of home run hitters comes to town. Him staying in the National League and getting out of that hitter-friendly park, I think, makes him a streaming option. I don't know if he'll ever get to, like, a 10-team league streaming option, but a 15-team league streaming option, I could see.
And then basically every other trade, honestly every other trade made this winter, certainly every other trade since the last time we talked, involved the Seattle Mariners. And they were all interesting. It was a really intriguing sequence of moves. The first, Seth Smith goes to Baltimore, and Yovani Gallardo goes to Seattle. I found that a thoroughly perplexing move. I've kind of always been high man on Seth Smith, and I really like him in Baltimore. I like him in that ballpark. I like him with a team that is just one of those teams that seems to be good at putting guys in position to succeed, a manager that's good at putting guys in position to succeed. I still don't think he's a star, but I like Seth Smith a lot more with this move than I did with him in Seattle. How high do you have Smith?
Yeah, I actually see how you see the Blue Jays and going to Toronto is kind of how I see the Orioles, especially for non-stars, guys who could maybe use a little bit of boost. Now, Seth Smith is someone who played multiple seasons in Colorado, so he's already had some of those benefits. But I just, with his platoon splits and him not facing lefties, I don't know if he can get over 20 home runs. So I kind of feel like that's the high water mark with him, 20 home runs and something in the 60s for RBI. So that kind of limits him for me to like a 15-team league guy. Like if I'm projecting something like 18 home runs, and his batting average is typically, well, his career average is .261, so you know probably under .270. It hasn't been that high really in the last few years. So I like him. I feel like this solidifies him as a deep mixed league guy. I feel like this being in Baltimore in the AL East maybe makes him a little more slump proof or bust proof.
Yep.
But I think the upside is limited. They have to platoon him. I agree that I found the trade perplexing from the Mariners' point of view with Gallardo. I don't know, even with him leaving the AL East, I'm just for fantasy, I'm not optimistic on him at all that he could keep his whip down. Do you kind of see it the same way?
Yeah, I'm a flat no on Gallardo until he shows me otherwise right now. That was not a product of context. He was just bad. He was just flat bad. And look, there's been some of that with starting pitchers going to Baltimore, and maybe it's just a tough division, a tough environment, but so maybe he gets out of there, you know. And if he gets out of there and succeeds, then maybe I look at Ubaldo Jimenez differently when he goes somewhere else, but I am a flat no on him. The other half of that move wasn't one trade, but kind of in tandem, is they bring in Jerod Dyson, who I think is probably going to be turned loose to play a lot in Seattle. Do you see a real change in Dyson's value with the move?
Yeah, well, yeah, for sure. I mean, he's a candidate now to steal 40 bases, and how many candidates are there really in baseball to steal 40 bases? There's for sure less than 10. There might even be no more than 5. I mean, with the Royals, he was stealing, you know, he was stealing a base for about every 10 plate appearances. Now, some of those may be pinch running opportunities, so he might not quite keep up that pace. But, I mean, even if he hits 2 home runs next year, if he can steal 44 bases, he belongs on mixed league teams because his batting average will be okay. Like, it won't help you, it won't hurt you. Anyone who can steal 40 bases in 2017 belongs on mixed league teams.
And that's so the question then becomes, do you buy that he's going to get that 550 plate? What do you think the over-under is for plate appearances for Dyson, a guy who has never had more than 330 in a big league season and is 32 years old?
Yeah, I do feel like he's going to start every time that they face a righty. That's kind of how the Mariners have typically shown, recently have shown that they like platoons. He's a platoon candidate. I think that he'll start against right-handers. I don't see why they would have traded for him if they weren't going to do that, because he is what he is. You know, he's a good fielder who has no power, and his on-base percentage is going to be pretty mediocre. But he's fast, and I don't know. I just think that this was clearly their plan: trade away Seth Smith, bring in Jerod Dyson. The Mariners seem to be kind of making moves in tandem. And this, when they make them really close together on the same day even, and this seems to be the plan. So he plays against right-handers. If he plays against right-handers, that probably means 400 at-bats. If he has 400 at-bats on his usual paces, that probably means 40 steals or something close to it, which means if you're in the late rounds and you haven't got a great base stealer, I think you have to grab him.
Do you like Carnes at all in Kansas City?
A little bit. I've always had some interest in Carnes. He's almost like the opposite of Gallardo as far as I do appreciate for the Mariners the ability of Gallardo to just eat 180 innings for them and have an ERA around 4. But for fantasy, Gallardo has poor strikeout rate, high whip. He just doesn't have any value. Carnes is kind of the opposite, where because of his high strikeout rate, if things go well for him in Kansas City, he could be pretty valuable. And I see him as a late-round boomer bust guy, and I'd rather take those late-round boomer bust guys in a mixed league. So I actually took Carnes in a 15-team league. I took him for my bench, but it was early in my bench. It's probably maybe around 24 or 25 recently. Do you think I'm right that, you know, that Carnes still has that potential?
I think he's intriguing. I do. I think he's, you know, he's in that category of guys, and I talk about this a lot, but it's kind of the way I view him. He's in the category of guys I'm not going to go and seek out, but he is a guy that if there are kind of other similar players of his tier, I like him more than others. He's somebody who would catch my eye at a point where there are others of those sort of we're filling out the back of our roster kind of guys. Well, that's an upside guy, so I like that.
For sure, and I do think he'll get that fifth starter spot if he has a solid spring. I know it's a competition, but when I look at him against Chris Young and Mike Minor, like I feel like it's not really Carnes against those other pitchers. I think this is kind of Carnes against himself. If he pitches well in the spring, I mean, with what they did, they just, you know, with training for him in the offseason, they gave up, I don't think Dyson's a lot, but they gave up something of value for him. I think he gets that chance if he earns it.
Yep. The other sequence of Seattle moves, they go and get Malik Smith and then flip him to Tampa Bay. And I think it's fair to say that by far the two key parts of this whole sequence were Smith and Drew Smyly. You know, Smiley's a guy we both talked about a lot. I think a guy we both like somewhat in the face of numbers that haven't always concurred with our take on him. And look, he goes from a good place to pitch to a good place to pitch. I don't want to make too much of him going to Seattle. Seattle's a good place to pitch, but so is St. Petersburg. With that said, I still like Drew Smyly, and I still kind of like taking a flyer on another fresh start. Maybe something that wasn't clicking for him with the Rays will click with Seattle. You know, the visiting ballparks are certainly a little easier. He still gets to go. He gets to go to Oakland. He gets to go to Anaheim instead of Baltimore, Boston, New York. I like Smyly. I don't know that I'm certainly not pushing all my chips in on him, but I like him a lot more than that 4-6 whatever ERA he had last year.
Yeah, I agree. It's the road venues that I agree that really piqued my interest. I'm wary of him. Like, I wouldn't invest in him in a way where I need him in my staff.
Yes.
But later in my staff, like either one of my last starting pitchers, like that's actually going to open the year in my lineup. I think he's a little, for me, he's higher than Carnes. He's had a little more success than that. I owned Smyly in some leagues last year, and the schedule was tough. Like, you know, you're like, oh, his next start's in Toronto. Well, I don't really want to use him there. Oh, he's going to Baltimore. Well, I definitely don't want to use him there. You know, if he's going to play the Angels, wherever that game happens, I'm okay with that. If he's pitching all right, if he's going to play the A's, no matter where the game is, I'm okay with that. So I think there'll be more matchups where you'll feel comfortable using him. And I do think the fresh start, he seemed visibly frustrated at times last season on the mound. And I think maybe the fresh start will be good for him.
And something, you know, that you've talked about, I think that you kind of alerted me to, is that even Houston, that's a tough place to pitch. But Smiley's a guy who can get you some strikeouts. So even in a game against the Astros where there's some downside risk, there's also some reward potential.
Yeah, and what we really need to find out with Smyly, and I think this is a bit of a make-or-break season from this perspective for him, is what are those strikeouts like? As far as in 2015, his strikeout rate just surged. His K per 9 was 10.4. He's not anything like that in any other season in his career, and it went right back down last season, so into the 8th. So if his K per 9 is in the 8th, then a lot of the upside with him is gone. But if he can start striking out a little more than a batter per inning, now we really have something. And now you can live with some home runs because his whip's generally fine. So low whip, high – that's what I liked about Smyly in the first place. Low whip, high strikeout rate, and we'll figure out the ERA. And I think I'd like to see him get back to that.
And then the other half of that move is that Malik Smith goes to a very crowded outfield situation in St. Petersburg that is apparently also adding Colby Rasmus, though – I don't believe that's been announced officially even yet, but it appears that Rasmus is going to Tampa Bay. There are a whole lot of outfielders, one fewer. They just traded Matuk to Detroit. But what do you do with that mix? Because there's some interesting players, and there are a few guys who, if you told me they were just going to turn Colby Rasmus loose and he was going to get 550 at-bats or plate appearances, even in St. Petersburg, I kind of like Rasmus. You know, as a late-round risk-reward guy, I'd be interested. Same thing with Smith, tremendous speed. But if it's not clear how they're going to find plate appearances for those guys, is there anybody who stands out for you in that mix?
Yeah, I mean, to me, the situation is kind of three players for two spots. I think Kiermaier's in center, and that
he's
healthy. That's happening. So
yep.
You've got Souza in right field, you've got Rasmus in left field, and you got Smith kind of floating around looking for opportunities. You've got Dickerson at DH, who they don't necessarily have to play every single day. So maybe sometimes one of those outfielders slides to DH. I'm not a big Rasmus guy. Just the strikeouts and the inconsistency kind of bug me. And Souza with the injuries, I think my general takeaway from this situation is I wouldn't mind seeing Malik Smith not slated for a starting role so that he goes way, way late in drafts or not at all. And then I'm kind of interested, and I'll admit to being a bit of a Malik Smith guy, I'm kind of interested in putting him on my bench and just waiting for something to happen as far as Rasmus to either get hurt or slump, Souza to either get hurt or slump, because both of those are possible, and then Smith to get his chance to play every day. Now, and when I say every day, I think maybe for now for him it might mean every day against righties.
Yeah, I'm a huge Smith fan for a variety of reasons, some of which are completely frivolous, which is to say he's from my hometown. So
that's a good reason.
Let's be upfront here that part of why I like him has nothing to do with his baseball skills, but I look at him and look. This is extremely optimistic. But I look at him, and I think you can make a case that there's a Lorenzo Cain starter kit there, that that's the player he could turn into. Not this year, but that that's the kind. Because even, you know, Cain didn't show that kind of power early. Smith flashed a little power at times. It doesn't shock me. It won't shock me if that's the kind of player he turns into. Not in 2017, but in two or three years, I think he's got that kind of upside.
Yeah, now that I know he's from your hometown, I'll tell you a couple other reasons. What I really like about Smith, his batting average was low last season, but his BABIP wasn't very high. It was .302, and he was hitting so many ground balls last season, and for a player with his skill set, that's a really good idea. He's fast, put the ball on the ground, and run. That's what Jonathan Villar has been doing, which has made him, you know, be able to get on base and steal bases. He walks a lot. So you've got a guy who doesn't have a lot of power, who's wisely putting the ball on the ground a lot, walking a lot. That's going to give him the potential to steal a lot of bases. And from a fantasy perspective, I just feel like if he can kind of master that skill set, I think the Lorenzo Cain comp is good. I could see him maybe being like Cain, but maybe not like Cain in his most powerful season, that 2015 year, but his other years, but maybe even a little speedier, where Cain kind of tops out in the high 20s for steals. I could see Smith being into the 30s and maybe even well into the 30s for steals if he can kind of master that skill set of a lot of ground balls, get on base, and those kind of players can hit at the top of the lineup, especially ones that can walk, and that means plenty of runs scored.
And then one last moving part of all of these trades, Matuk goes to Detroit, where apparently he's going to be the everyday center fielder, or at least the primary center fielder. Is that enough for you to have any interest in him?
I'm still going to say not interested, and yeah, I mean, He was pretty up and down last year. He was pretty poor when he was with the Rays. You know, he hasn't had a lot of success against righties. I feel like he should be platoon. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Tigers still go out and add some veteran who price just plummets, and they get him basically on a minor league deal or for a 1 year, $1 million or $2 million deal, and then kind of share time in center field. If I was drafting today, I wouldn't consider Matuk in any mixed league.
One last thing. We have pretty much wrapped up the moves here, but the MLB.com 2017 fantasy rankings are coming soon. We are certainly now counting down towards 2017 rather than looking back at 16. You are obviously a big part of that process, and we are not going to tease any of that just yet. But as you sort of start looking at what's out there, looking at rankings, looking at players, doing mocks, all that kind of thing, what are some general ideas, some general thoughts that are starting to come to you as you look at fantasy drafting 2017?
Yeah, a few takeaways I've had so far, kind of big picture things, and some of them were things I had already thought but needed to see the numbers to be confirmed. You know, one of the big ones is I don't think there's a lot of position scarcity this year outside of catcher. Catcher will always be catcher in its own unique world, but usually shortstops and second basemen are high in demand, or you would pick the shortstop or second baseman just because they're a shortstop or second baseman. I don't think you need to do that anymore. Those positions are deep, and it can be a tiebreaker if you have two players ranked evenly, but outfield is not as deep as it used to be, and there's nothing wrong now with loading up on outfielders early because you might not like what's available late. Starting pitcher is a really weird. I mean, I think we're going to have a long discussion when we get to that starting pitcher preview podcast because there are so, basically, you know, half the aces from last season didn't perform like aces or more than half, and the decisions on guys like Dallas Keuchel and Sonny Gray and Matt Harvey and Gerrit Cole, they're really hard decisions, and they're going to shape, you know, how you build your pitching staff this season. And then one other takeaway that I, you know, that I've noticed that I think we all saw coming, and I think we've mentioned it already just today, there are not a lot of stolen bases out there. We have very few players projected to steal 30 bases or more, so if you can get a 30 or 40 steal player who isn't a batting average drain, can maybe even hit 8 or 10 home runs, those players I think are going to be really coveted in drafts because once you get one of them, then you can kind of relax with your steals.
All right, well, that's the Fantasy 411 for this week. We are, as I said, counting down. I think the next time we talk, it's going to be February, so we're getting there. So thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk, and thanks, everybody, for listening.